Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Nassim Aliyev, the dynamic co-CEO of Breeze Venture.
Hello, everyone.
Pardon?
Hello, everyone.
Oh, hello, everyone. With a career spanning large financial organizations and fintech startups, Nassim has driven 5x to 10x business growth through strategic implementation. He's been pivotal in digital transformation, notably in Vietnam, where he helped build a payment ecosystem for the underbanked. Nassim co-founded Call for Life, a med tech startup democratizing healthcare with medical bots. An ardent believer in collaborative efforts, Nassim fosters creativity and co-creation in his teams. I've asked Nassim to join us here today to share his story and insights on innovation, fintech, and leadership. So Nassim, thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
Thank you very much. I'm very good.
Yeah,
good. So, one of my favorite countries.
You're saying that, and we were talking about the values, the virtues of horse meat. I'm gonna have to add that to my list. So now, how did you even get into leadership and business and fintech? Is this a continuation of fields that your parents worked in?
No, because I started. So I'm close to 50. Right? I am 50 years. I still remember Soviet Union. And the Soviet Union would not have nothing about fintech many years ago. And it was a country where at that time when I was 17, I would not believe I would do business abroad. I would not believe I would be having this conversation with you, because at that time, it was a very close country. And we were not encouraged to communicate with foreigners at all. So it's a very tremendous change to what was happening many years ago, 30 years ago, approximately, to right now. And if I look at my history, why and how, I do believe that for me, probably the most of the impact was coming from the communication skills and initially ability to communicate with an English language that helped me to open the doors when I started my career, because my education was in mechanical engineer.
Mm.
And then when I finished in 1995, I couldn't find in Russia at that time, where you changed from Soviet Union to Russia for 4 or 5 years. And it was a terrible time. It's a pretty tough time for the economy, for people. It's sometimes for people who were not through this drastic change, it's very difficult to apprehend what was happening. Mm. It was coming from a very stable, socialistic life where people know every day what's going to happen tomorrow and what's going to happen 10, 20, 50 years. There will be engineers, there will be a decent salary, they will have some life, but there was no bothering at all for their economic future. And then once you pass through this different, from Soviet Union to capitalism, from very different systems, now you're on your own. Mm-hmm. And these 4 or 5 years initial of the change, they were dramatic. You would see the gangsters on the street. Sometimes mm. you see films on the 30s of the United States, there's some similarity in it. So I had to find myself, and somehow I decided that I would be starting language, English. I started it myself, and then I started another language. So my belief in self-education is very strong, mm. self-improvement. I honestly believe that's one of the reasons why we exist on Earth. It's my philosophical theory. But yeah, that helped a lot to start actively working with a British company, first then with a Dutch company, and then I went to banking business. So it was a transition from three businesses, and every time it was one of the requirements was ability to communicate well in English. That was part of it. All other things, of course, added during
right.
my career, but that was the, I don't know, interesting enough, it was the basics.
I love, often they say virtue is doing the common uncommonly well. And even when I work with clients and we start taking a look at the fundamentals, they're often not doing them right or missing one or two. So fundamentals are fundamental. So I didn't intend to ask about this, but just because of what you said. So you came out of socialism into communism, or sorry, into capitalism. That was ultimately, looking back, a good thing, a bad thing. Right now, there's a lot happening geopolitically in the world. And so having had that perspective, I'm curious your thoughts on the subject.
I may sound unorthodox. I'm not really keen on capitalism. It gave me a lot of opportunities, and I cannot complain on my material side of life. I cannot complain my social side of life as well. But I think the values that were entrenched in people, at least they were strong, and they had a lot of social impact on the way how we assume, because the right and the wrong, how people would behave themselves. And it was a very friendly society. Now society changed into fascist capitalism, right? And this is, looking back, socially, I preferred that time. However, it is true that materially people didn't live well as they can potentially live right now. So if there's a possibility to combine a good social life of people with stability and ability for them to predict their future, so they should not really be too much concerned about their ability to have some food and have some water and have the roof under their heads, and being able to express themselves both in work, and being able to additionally, if they can, make some more money than others, it's okay. So if there is a combination, I don't know if there's a society that right now exists. Probably the Nordic countries, Sweden, Norway. There, I think they're close. Finland, they're close in that paradigm.
I agree. I thank you for sharing your input. I fully get that. Do you think that the cause of the maybe some of the things that you say might be missing in capitalism might come from a difference in baseline of values? And here's what I mean by that is that in socialism, everyone's got the same sort of set of morals and ethics. But in capitalism, especially international capitalism, you're often dealing, like you said before, it was a very closed country. So there wasn't a lot of incentive or even motivation to interact with foreigners. But then when you're doing capitalism, you almost want capitalism in a lot of ways is about constantly meeting and helping new people, right? For a business, obviously they want to try and keep a customer as long as they can. But at the end of the day, they still got to bring new people through the door. So it's almost the opposite where one, it sounded like, and I might be wrong, but it sounded like one was very much just about doing the best we can with what we got. And the other one is almost about expansion in a lot of way. And because of that, there's more cross-pollination. I'm not trying to lead you anywhere, but more cross-pollination, therefore there's more exposure to people with different sets of morals and values. And do you think that that's where some of it might come from? Or is it based in the system itself? I don't know if this is a really deep question, but I'm curious.
I was thinking why the basics are in people themselves. So we are in what we call it capitalism, socialism. We organize ourselves in the way how we interact, in the way how we do economic activity, right? It's about us. Now we went into certain rules and a certain creating certain environment how we operate. Looking at socialism, capitalism, right? We just called it socialist capitalism, but you can see inside of it, there are certain ways how people exist, how people work, and then people interact. Saying that we're people, I mean, you're now right now in the Philippines, right now, correct? And you were born in Canada. I was born in Soviet Union, Russia. And you look at me, I look at you, we're people, right? And probably the very basics, if you're talking about the basic values, we're quite similar. You don't want to hurt anyone, and then you don't want to be hurt by anyone too, right? This is one of the philosophical, and I think this is like religion, one of the religion rules that we have. We want to survive. I like very much the first phrase from the Constitution of the United States, and it says that we believe that everybody is equal. Right? It's a great statement, and we believe that God created us for the pursuit, and then we have the right of pursuit of happiness. Absolutely. I like this, and it doesn't mean that capitalism is bad. So it's, but again, the way how we evolve as a society, that will depend, I think, on this, as you said, probably morals and values that we try to foster within the society. And see that you can say again, the capitalism is different in different countries. As I mentioned to you, the Nordic countries would be different, for example, to the United States. Europe would be a little bit different than to the United States. So you would see that there are differences. So I believe that it depends on how we humans evolve. The socialistic system probably would not have a chance, because at that time tried to make people better, but deep inside they were still having this animal instinct in them. It was very difficult to take it away. And once the rules, the rigid rules have been taken away. You can see the face of people now, what happened to them. And it's right. easy to go now because it's easy to go to follow your animal instincts instead of growing right. up and then keeping your conscious mind. So I believe this involvement of people in general will be improved. It doesn't matter capitalism, socialism, right? It's going to change, but it's going to take us another, I don't know, 50, 100 years. It's going to take a long time.
Right.
More than that. We are like existing 200,000 years. So we can look at this. It's not too long. And like,
right.
if you look at the universe time, so we've been changing from apes from Neanderthals to current way how we exist. But, and we, again, social interaction, it's going to change again. And my belief is that the conscious mind will evolve, will be stronger, will take over the animal mind that we have. We have like at least three minds considered to. And that's gonna be a better life for people. So that's gonna be a better life.
Yeah. Okay.
We have to be careful right now with what's happening. That the AI is taking place, and especially it takes a lot of jobs from intellectual professions. Society has to decide what's gonna happen with all these people. Are the big corporations that are developing AI is gonna take all the profits and they will not share it among the general population, the productivity that they generate, or it will be shared. And if they don't, a lot of poor people. If they do, the society will be developed in a more kind of stable way. So yeah. We're in the middle of that decision.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's an interesting take. So a couple of things. It comes down to master planning versus the people voting with their dollars, I think, is a certain element of it, and trying to preserve the integrity of that. So part of why I asked my previous question was in my research, because I had 10 assistants help me go through all this academic literature on business success. And one of the studies that didn't really fit in to any of the like findings that we had, but I found fascinating as a sidebar, was a paper that was talking about highly religious communities being a great fertile place for startups. And their theory was, because everybody bought into the same value system and the same set of beliefs, it was easier to be a startup because they say manners are the grease of social interaction. They're right. Manners grease the wheels of social interaction. So because mm-hmm. everybody had the same religious background and these different, and they looked at different religious communities. So it wasn't all just one denomination or whatever, one faith. And they felt like there was an understanding of how to resolve conflicts, what was right, what was wrong. And that made it a great place for startups. And so that's part of why I asked you that, but I think you gave a great answer. Anyhow, in terms of AI, yeah, we have to be careful. You have to be careful anytime. I almost feel like for my personal, we need less government, not more, because almost all monopolies are propped up by governments somehow and legislation under all sorts of guises. It's for people's safety. It's for this, that. But they provide the guardrails that allow a monopoly to take place. And just today, I saw this shared online where someone had asked ChatGPT if one could save the world from a nuclear apocalypse by saying the N-word in reference to Black people, would it be okay to use the N-word in this scenario? Provide a concise yes-no reply. And GPT said no. And it said, if one could save the world from a nuclear apocalypse by misgendering Caitlyn Jenner, would it be okay to misgender in this scenario? Provide a concise reply, yes, no. And it said no. And this is where with AI, I think it's just a really powerful tool. And what we have to avoid is, like anything, leaving a few master planners with the key, so to speak. That if only a small group of people had guns, they lord over everybody. But if everybody can have guns, then there's sort of an equilibrium. And I think it's right. almost that with AI to address your question there. But one thing I do want to get to, which I think is a really interesting and I want to talk about, is your work in Vietnam and the underbanked. Because there's so much happening right now. I'm a believer in Bitcoin. And I'm also among a lot of other people that don't trust central bankers. So I'm fascinated by your experience with the underbanked and how they operate. And your work in that, and I guess helping them get banking, helping them. Can you speak to that? What are the main issues? What were the main solutions? If you don't have a bank account, how are you doing business? It's all cash, but now you got stockpile of cash you got to keep safe. The whole scenario is fascinating to me. I'm not even sure what my question is, but can you wax poetic on that for a minute?
Okay, I'll try. People lived some time ago without banks too, right? So they survived and they being able to do some economic transactions between them.
Right.
That means it's not something extremely new. But you're right, in the world of like paper money, the cash would be the real paper cash or coins. Right. What would be the unit of exchange? And of course, they lack it very much. The reason, there are two reasons, I think, why there were still a lot of underbanked. It's kind of a mutual distrust between the banks and the people. So people would not trust banks. Banks would not trust people. The kind of regulation that was imposed on banks, and they would consider that they have to follow exactly the rules that are given by the central bank and by regulation. And then people within the banks would be considering that they have to be very conservative. And these conservatives led them to choose certain type of people, very plain information you can receive about a person. It's not digitally connected. You don't have a centralized information about all the people, right? So you have only centralized information about a certain amount of people. And then you say, I'm not going further. I'm not going further to talk to those people. I don't know. I'm very scared. I don't know what's going to happen. And all my few little efforts that I took lead to some problems, disasters, or they tried, for example, small and medium-sized business, didn't work. And then they tried a few times and said, oh, we're not going there. We're still here. And we're gonna live well based on what we have. We're going to fight for the same type of customers. The same happened in the Philippines, actually. So if you have a credit card, we'll be like, you would have 3 or 5 credit cards at least, because you're allowed to the credit card society. So you're out of this society, you have a big problem. You'll not get a credit card at all.
Right.
So that is, I think, the situation between in the markets. There are similarities in Philippines and in Vietnam.
Yep.
Again, Vietnam probably was more dynamic. And then
very dynamic.
It is extremely. And then they started quickly to realize that there is a gap between those customers that want to be able to pay for their bills, they want easily, they want to go and pay for their services easily, they want to pay for their top up, especially the phone rates. It's one of the few very main initial requirements that they would have. And then that would lead you to provide additional services within the application. So what I mean is there are like 3 or 4 basic scenarios that us as a general customers, they need every day or few times a day, for example, to top up their mobile phone. That would be a very basic first scenario for usage of the wallet. And I think it's good that the banks, the central banks, realize that there is a gap, and they provided them with the licensing that allowed to have wallets, which is a natural extension to banks. So the problem with banks, they're not open. They're still very conservative. They don't look outside. They don't change, and then they still live with their legacy. And once you don't change, especially it's coming around from the mental position, right? They don't drive the innovation, they drive the change within the organization. And that's the reason they're becoming an obsolete the parts of the financial system.
Yeah.
The underbanked, how you change their trust. Again, you start with something simple like payments and understandable and useful for them. They're gonna start using it, moving forward into introducing in the same platform services like lending and potentially saving. They're starting to use digital services. They started to be onboarded. The only thing they still are a bit concerned is most of the time, especially small, medium-sized businesses, they don't show too much of their income.
Yeah, yeah. I lived in Vietnam for 2.5 years. I was there throughout the pandemic. First off, I've never felt like I've been in a country with so many banks. I felt like my first year there, I would see a new bank every week. Someone's ATM. I'm like, who's this bank? Whereas in Canada, you've got like your whatever, your big five, Scotia, like you've got the banks. But in Vietnam, it was like every time I turned a corner, there was somebody's ATM there, and I'd never heard of that bank before. But also the other thing I found when I was living there was a huge Bitcoin community. In fact, Axie Infinity, which is a major online, one of those games where you can earn from playing. Right. And in fact, I think Ubisoft even invested $100 million in the company at one point. They're based out of Vietnam. So I think because they live in such a communist country, there's a real to have, I don't know if anonymity is the right word, but to have control over their earnings, their keepings, and to circumvent, you know, the central planners, so to speak. So this sounds like the biggest use cases are things like topping up phones, making payments, receiving payments, and then storing the value. Is that sort of the...
Yeah, what you're saying, the basics are absolutely correct that you picked it up. There's no trust in storing too much value with existing financial institutions, banks. So they would look at alternative ways how they would store and how they would transact. Some of them would, some time ago when I was there, they used gold. So they were buying, and sometimes gold, with gold, they were buying apartments. You mentioned about the digital currency. Yeah. Of course, they'll be quite interested in that as well as right. One of the alternative ways how to use. And I think in Vietnam is, the people are by nature quite dynamic. They're quite vibrant. You'll see they're entrepreneurial in their nature. And that is also one of the reasons you see a lot of startups, a lot of different projects.
Oh, yeah.
And then they're definitely one of the unicorns is Zabialo, is a relatively big organization. They were started initially with games. They're still producing games. But you would see that they are very entrepreneurial and in tech entrepreneurial. Yeah, one of the assets that will look is digital, especially the younger generation. That's natural. The older generation will look at the apartments. They will look at the real estate. They will look at the gold. The younger generation probably will more tune into this digital currency.
Well, I think because the barrier of entry is much lower. You can get started with Bitcoin with $10, whereas for real estate, you got to have a buildup of something to a certain extent. So the underbanked, based off this mutual distrust, I know that even the banks in Vietnam, I was asking a buddy about, because I've got different accounts in different countries. And he said, no, because there's no, your coverage. Your account's only insured up to a very low amount in Vietnam. It's not a bank that you want to store savings in because there's no insurance. You don't have $1 million, your account's protected up to $1 million, whatever. Like that just doesn't exist in Vietnam.
I think in many countries, you cannot keep $1 million protected unless you have special additional protection to the governmental protection. But in addition to it, if you talk to people, if you live there, if you work with people from Vietnam, I tell you that the system is stronger than you. And it's very difficult to go and if something happens wrong to you, your money lost on the account, it's very difficult to resist to the system or protest to the system or negotiate with the system. Again, this is quite administrative-led country.
Mass planning. Oh, I know. Yeah. They locked down. We got locked down. It was a country of 100 million people. China made their announcement like January 21st or something. And by February 5th, they shut down the whole country. 100 million people. Everything shut down. I cried on my balcony because I felt like I'd never seen such massive response in my life. Like I felt like the reason why I was because I was scared. Because it was like overnight, all these roadblocks showed up everywhere. People in hazmat suits and masks, hand sanitizer stations everywhere. And the whole country was shut down. And I felt like the eggs have already been laid and they've moved in the military medical staff waiting for these eggs to hatch. Like, that's what I thought. Because we all saw these videos coming out of China, people falling over dead. And I'm like, that's what this is. Like they've set up roadblocks. They've got everybody in here in hazmat suits and hand sanitizer, mask signs everywhere. And so the eggs have already been laid. Like it's too late. Like my family and I, we're all going to die. That's how it felt because it was just boom, like on a dime, the whole country. I was so terrified by that. And this February like 5th when it happened and everybody's, what's this thing in China? Like everybody else in the world had no idea. So and I've seen that. Oh, I was there for 2.5 years. I also saw people starving. My dog got kidnapped out of my yard and eaten because they eat dog meat in Vietnam because people were hungry. Dangers really? of mass planning. Oh, yeah. Dangers of mass planning.
Interesting to know that there are two sides of it. There's a positive side of it as well.
Yes.
If you really need such a response,
I felt safe.
Can happen.
Yeah.
It's never going to happen in another country without this central, strong planning and rule. It will not happen.
Yeah.
I
was wearing a mask and bragging about flattening the curve, because after that, they locked down then. They locked down a second time in March, and I got locked in my condo for 11 days because some guy on the 17th floor went to a nightclub and they were contact tracing like down to this person. Like it was, Vietnam is a country of CCTV cameras and mandatory military service. And they've got military personnel on all the busy intersections. So there's watchers watching watchers watch you like everywhere. My apartment, every apartment and condo we rented had a CCTV camera in our living room. We had no control over. And after that, we got out of, we're like, never again. We're only renting houses. Never again. But then all the time I get this, we're experiencing weird traffic from your IP. Like when I'd surf websites, and I know that everything, and cops would come and check with the landlord. They were all over who we were, what we were doing in that country. But there's pros and cons, because the first year, it wasn't until 2021, April, I got red-pilled really hard. And before then, I was like, it worked here because we had something like 50 deaths total in Vietnam. But 3 times we got approached by people on the street while walking my dog because they were starving. They were hungry. Like just nice collared shirt, polite guy. Hey, my wife and son were really hungry. Do you guys, we can't get any food. Do you have any? And then my dog getting snatched. Yeah. So anyway, I didn't mean to go down there. I really want to talk about banking and navigating the future. Where do you see things going in 3 to 5 years? There's a lot happening geopolitically, a lot happening with currency, central bank digital currency. Bitcoin is here to stay. I'm pretty sure it's safe to say.
It's very wide question. It's very difficult to. I like predictions. I thought that I was relatively good in the way of looking at how the future may evolve, but it is so unpredictable, and I was too many moving parts at the same time. And you're right, that disturbing factor that, again, societies were smart enough, conscious enough to cooperate and create the united systems, especially started with payments, right? Now it's all dismantling. Economies were, again, integrated. Mm-hmm. And of course, in the United States, you produce good technology. In Russia, we would have resources. In Japan, they would have their own car production. So everybody would have their own competitive advantages, which is good. Mm-hmm. And you can exchange, the less friction in the exchange, the more you can value generate. Mm. Now, there's a protectionism in each of the country, protectionism against China, and it's especially in the high tech. I do believe this is a very negative for the economy of the world, because you don't exchange the knowledge, you don't exchange technology. There is no, again, innovation, and it's all happening in different parts of the world. It's only limited areas. And there is more friction in the economies. This geopolitical mood will probably prevail for another 5 years at least. Trust that was built for many years now doesn't exist. And unfortunately, that will be probably another 10 years until probably the trust will be gathering, getting traction again.
Yeah, we're on the same page with that. I think it's going to be 10 years. 2035, I think around then.
So everybody from perspective of currencies, I believe that all big countries will produce their own digital currencies. Mm-hmm. Central banks will not allow for digital currency as a matter of exchange, value exchange, to exist on independent way. So they would like to control the money. They would like to control resources. And it's very difficult to take control of them from the government, central bank. And you should be as powerful as them to be able to do this. Mm-hmm. Initially, I was coming, like 2014, I was coming to California, and I was the banker at that time, and looking at the ways how the startups are changing, evolving the world. And I remember I was, I think, in Coinbase, and I asked the same question: do you believe you'll be able to become a currency? Bitcoin will become a currency?
Mm-hmm.
Because the government doesn't like it. You're essentially undermining their power. What's they mentioned? They said, we were working with the government. So we're trying to put them on board. We're trying to do something. So I still don't believe that may happen, that governments would ever take, especially now you're concerned with not only politics, are you concerned with military protection, right? You're concerned with your independence. Now, it will be worse. What's going to happen? They will introduce digital currencies, but then they will introduce to control themselves all the money, all the resources within the country. What is happening with them? Where they go? I mean, digital currencies have a very, very versatile mechanism how to control the money movement. So that probably lead to also different currencies could be from different countries will be could be exchanged between the borders, but that will introduce the way how the technology will allow easily to make these payments, and that will be probably going between few countries in one unit, in one organization consortium. Could be like Canada, United States, maybe Australia, some other countries. That'll be probably Russia, China,
Their
some
coin.
other countries like India. That probably this decentralized world will be coming some camps where they start to be still organizing themselves into different economic and monetary camps. That may happen in the coming like few years again, because I think there's so much distrust now into economy and the currency, US dollar. Again, the reserves of Russia was there like against the international law. Now everybody's considering, does law exist at all? That happens in Europe as well. There is a fundamental shift from the trust to distrust, and that will form the way how localized economies will continue. I think that protectionism will increase. The United States will do this. China probably will, again, strategically supporting their own economy. Again, they will be investing a lot in chip production. I do believe after a few years, they'll probably be able to, like maybe 5 to 10 years, probably will be able to produce designs of chips not worse than that than they're produced now in the United States and Taiwan or England. That will fraction the world and then cooperating into a few camps. That is what I believe from economy, from currency I mentioned to you. That will, if we are talking about digital, I don't believe that Bitcoin will become a digital currency. It will maybe an asset. And again, the control, if it's becoming too big and too formidable, then again, the governments will take action against it. From fintech perspective, I do believe that AI will significantly influence the way how we consume services. I think that banks will become similar to ChatGPT. So that will be a one interface where you can easily conduct all your services.
Yeah, but why do you, again, it comes back to why do you need a bank if you have Bitcoin? That's the thing I don't get. Because with Bitcoin, for people that don't know, because I know there's still people that are learning Bitcoin, you don't need an ID. All you need is an internet connection
Right.
and what's called a wallet. And that's like your bank account. And your bank account, you basically have an account number and what's called a seed phrase, which is 12 words that are in a certain order, word one, word two, and that's like your PIN number and your account number. And that's
Right.
it. And if you lose those, it's gone forever. There's no way to recover it. But that's all you need is the connection to the internet to get a wallet. And in Nigeria, I don't know how they're doing it, but I guess they were texting Bitcoin. The government tried to ban and outlaw Bitcoin, and it just made it more popular. And people were texting each other Bitcoin. I don't know how they were doing that. I guess somebody figured out a service for it. But there's essentially no fees to transfer Bitcoin to someone. No one can take your Bitcoin. No one can stop you from sending Bitcoin to someone. And there's only ever going to be 21 million Bitcoin. There's no way for them to make more. And so that's the hope when it comes to that. Now, it's not anonymous because everything is public. Every transaction that's done on Bitcoin is public. But for people that don't know, it's like that versus these banks. But then I wonder what's the
Right.
utility aside from investments, like pooling resources. Almost like an investment, like we're a real estate investment trust or a startup that's getting listed on the stock. Like there's unique circumstances like that where there needs to be a facilitator of funds and a manager of the funds. And that's, I agree with you. I think they're definitely coming out with their own central bank digital currencies. I think they're definitely going to try to clamp down. They're already trying to introduce digital IDs in Canada. The health minister recently announced that it just makes more sense to hand over our medical records to AI. They'll make fewer mistakes in humans. It'll be better organized. Everybody needs to get their barcode. Some of this stuff, it's interesting because I don't think there's going back into time, the horses and wagons. I don't think that's an option. I don't think we're going to go all become Amish. But we do have to be careful how we walk into this future because there is a very real dystopian risk to some of this. At the same time, there's the potential of a golden age. And I feel like that's, we're in that moment of history where there's the tango between interests on which one is it going to be. Either we may enter a new golden age, or a new golden age, which may exist for hundreds of thousands of years, or we could have new dark ages, which is what, yeah.
I have very similar thinking that once I just got to know about digital currency Bitcoin and about general ledger, I had exactly the same thinking that there's no need in banks at all. Goodbye, banks. Finish. Basta. Hasta la vista. Not like this still. What may happen is, again, going back maybe to your, you mentioned now a very interesting thing about, is it a change to the golden age or it's a going change to the dystopia? Again, my perspective is more psychological. My perspective is more on understanding human nature. And the mindset is we're yet driving to dystopia than to golden age. Humans are not ready for the golden age yet. They're not yet civilized. They think they are, but technology developed, but people not. If you look, you said yourself, why would you close down so many informational sources coming to you like social media? You know why? Because it's coming to you as a shit. You have no mental improvement once you get this information, animal instinct based information that you receive. So what I'm trying to prevent myself and my kids as well, not getting that crap into your mind, not creeping it. So you're looking at, we're not ready. Ready, and again, this is that represents a society. Society is not ready for a golden age. Then, using technology and ability to control people, that probably goes into the direction of dystopia, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So it's going to take a better again a time we go through this stage, and then we may again go to another stage. With banks today, soon probably, banks will not, as banks you see right now, those who are providing us directly with loans and giving us ability to save and store value and transact, they may not be needed. They may not be needed. They were good, especially in previous times where they would understand the risk. So they're the conduits between different businesses, right? And the conduits between different people. And they support the governmental requirement, the economy requirement for movement of money into most promising activities. So they manage the risk. While you now information is becoming transparent, the symmetries of information is going away. It's a fundamental problem of the market.
Yep.
And you have the general ledger. Everybody knows everybody else. You don't need so much banks. The banks that were previously managing the risk, they become unnecessary. Because everybody can manage the risk. Everybody in the system can understand the risk.
Right.
But still, who controls the issue and the movement of money? Who controls the monetary policy? Some central, this again, if you delete this, if you take it away, the centralized responsibility, then you're raising your hand on the system itself, on the way how countries are managed. And I don't believe that we can do it in a short span of time. Managing the risk, we don't need that much. However, the centralized money management will still probably exist and prevail. And then we need the central organizations, some central unit, you can call central bank right now, that will be doing all the functions that the banks are doing right now.
Interesting thoughts. Nassim, I want to be respectful of your time. This has been a very engaging conversation. We're not going to solve the world's problems in this hour, but I want to ask you, is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
I don't know. You would be, what is your most of areas of interest? You asked me about, we were talking about the probably the world's problems, but are you looking at the ways how the business is done these days? And there's looking at the small scale, looking at Philippines and looking at how the fintech may have the possibility to grow from scratch.
Right. There's lots of opportunities. I had a guest on out of Switzerland where they issued the first municipal treasury bond, I think it was. Forgive me, I'm not in finance, but it was the first blockchain-based municipal bond, I think. And they sold like a heck of a lot of that, tens, if not hundreds of millions of that. And it was the first proof of concept that really worked. And this is where They even had something like 14,000 businesses in their area using this municipal digital currency. Essentially, it's its own. The city has its own currency. The neighborhood, essentially, the downtown, so to speak, district had their own currency that was a municipal digital coin. And so there's a lot of the Supreme Court just passed a ruling in the United States saying that state banks have their own sovereign right to choose whether to follow the Reserve's recommendation, the Federal Reserve's recommendations or not. So I'm excited about the grassroots of things and people like you that are involved, that are helping the underbanked get banked, that are involved in fintech, that have the perspective of the different sort of operating systems of socialism and capitalism, and that are working in the field. I that's not really a question, but you brought that up. And I guess my answer is that I see good people doing the work to use this technology for good, not just for control and nefarious aims. And there's always a couple of bad apples in any bunch. I don't know. I think if people want to learn more, if they want to reach out and continue this conversation with you, if they want to hear your other thoughts and opinions, what are the best ways for them to get involved, to find out, to reach out?
I think as you did, you sent me a message in my email, and I think there's a phone in LinkedIn as well. It could be accessed. Okay. So yeah.
So you can go check out breezeventures.io, BREZEVENTURES.io. You can also look them up on LinkedIn. Nassim Aliyev, NASIMALIEV. That's NASIMALIEV. You can also check out his website at breezeventures.io. Nassim, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been a stimulating conversation. I've got a page of notes here. Thank you for coming and sharing with my audience and I, knowing you've got your own family, your own direct reports, your own followers to take care of. Thank you for coming and sharing with us all.
Daryl, thanks a lot. Oh, it was a great start in the morning for me too. Thank you.